Good to go.
All right. So welcome, thanks. Looks like we do have some interest in AI within ASA.
You need to hold it closer.
Okay, yeah, thanks. And just signal me if I if I start moving my hands around. Welcome everybody. So today I'm gonna talk about the application of AI to healthcare and incorporating compassion into these systems. So specifically, I'm going to focus on the moral psychology and theology of compassion and how that can inform compassionate AI. So this this talk, whereas like the other talks are about how we can be, you know, use AI in a caring way, I'm actually talking about how we can bring the care and compassion actually into the AI in terms of moral psychology. Both so that the AI can help understand us better, so we can understand compassion and other aspects of moral psychology better through those models, and then in the long run, so that we can actually have compassionate AI as it gains more and more power within society. So like AI is, I mean, it's here. People, you know, are very much aware of it. It's been impacting society for the past couple of years. And it's going to operate even faster and be more pervasive in the future than it is now. So its speed and complexity mean that it will remain opaque, even with advances in explaining it better. So the risk of harms caused by AI is substantial, and we will need AI systems to monitor AI for ethical harms and the impact on human suffering. Although many people make the best decisions that they can, good intentions among AI developers and users are not going to be sufficient. Ethics is hard. Navigating a decision's near-term and long-term effects on human suffering and flourishing requires moral awareness and a kind of savvy common sense that Aristotle called phronesis, or practical wisdom. So practical wisdom. So children typically know the basis of right and wrong, but then the challenge for us adults is who aim to act ethically, is to apply that knowledge in these complex situations where moral aspirations may conflict. For example, a desire to be honest, a desire to be friendly, being loyal to family. When those conflict, as the situations get more and more complex, then something like practical wisdom or prudence or phronesis is needed to help one navigate among those different, you know, virtues. So people can ideally rely on their conscience or moral intuitions to help, but AI doesn't understand the variety of the ways that humans suffer and live well, and so it can't make proper moral decisions in complex settings without that knowledge. So it can't make decisions because it doesn't understand us, and thus it can't help us augment those decisions without understanding that better. So if we don't incorporate the knowledge of human suffering and well-being in AI systems, then we're going to prevent them from making moral decisions. It's one question about how ethical, what kind of ethics we want, but if we don't start embedding some of this within AI systems, we're just going to prevent it. So a couple of definitions, because these terms could be used in different ways. So by compassion, I'm referring to an emotional response to another person's suffering that motivates one to relieve that suffering. So it's both an awareness and a motivation. And about for suffering, I consider it to be an unpleasant or anguishing experience of actual or threatened loss of some aspect of oneself. And I use that definition analogous to kind of the medical understanding of pain as like actual or threat of damage to tissue. And so we've got an analogy between kind of pain and suffering that's helpful within, you know, a medical applications. And so research has shown that compassion and empathetic caregiving improve patient health outcomes, their communication with and trust of healthcare providers, recovery is quicker, they adhere to the medical care plan, they score higher on measures of well-being. But then when you think about bringing AI into healthcare, then it interferes with patient, can often interfere with patient care, and it can increase inequities in the healthcare system. So by incorporating compassion into AI for healthcare, the potential source of harm from AI automation can then be turned into a health benefit. So I want to raise the question of what if AI could communicate and respond compassionately to improve patient care, safety, and well-being, and to set a reasonably high bar, I want to aim for AI to do so more than a typical healthcare worker, not an exemplary healthcare worker, just a typical, you know, overworked, underpaid healthcare worker. So examine compassion more closely. So psychologists have identified five elements of compassion: that recognizing of suffering, the feeling for the person in distress, understanding the universality of suffering in human existence, tolerating uncomfortable feelings, and a motivation to act or acting to alleviate suffering. So this is, compassion is different from empathy, which is understood to combine a cognitive capacity to recognize and understand another person's emotions and perspectives, not just their suffering, and also an affective capacity that refers to being affected by and sharing in another person's emotions, not only their distress. So affective computing is an area of AI research that's made progress in identifying human feelings, but it's challenged to incorporate context into that recognition. And so although computers can imitate human feelings, such as in avatars, that's not the same as sharing feelings or feeling for another person. And so there's overlap there. But I think it's important to focus, one of the reasons I focus on compassionate AI is to try and get to this idea of motivation so that it's a little bit harder to use compassion, the technology in an ethical, harmful way. You can't, if you can empathize and just recognize feelings, then that could be used for good or manipulation. But if built into the system is that you're trying to do this in order to alleviate suffering, and then you tune the rest of the system to that, then it's a little bit harder to use it as a bad actor. It can still be done, but it's a little bit more challenging. And so two initial areas for AI research and development are examining how AI can learn to recognize suffering in its multifaceted meaning and exploring what it would mean for AI to have a motivation to act or alleviate suffering. So that's kind of the introductory piece. And so now I'm going to summarize a lot of psychology in one slide to kind of take the kind of a bigger step. And so the study of perception, cognition, self-development, and virtue by psychologists can inform the development of moral awareness and action in AI, both by postulating plausible mechanisms for AI and by characterizing the human targets with which AI must relate. So kind of so I'm going to talk about six different areas of moral psychology that I think are relevant for this development of AI. So findings in ecological and in active cognition challenge the notion that people passively receive in the external world, and those theories characterize perception as an active sensing of what external phenomena might afford or provide given the person's needs and possible actions. So, hang on. So if you're walking around a forest looking for a stick, then what sticks you look for, what you perceive, differ depending upon whether you're looking for firewood, looking for a walking stick, looking for a splint to help brace someone's broken limb. So what your motivation to look for, what you're looking for, motivates what you pick out of an environment that has a lot of stimuli. And so that kind of gives us the foundation that something, that there's some orientation. It's not just pulling everything in, but our motivation is actually deriving our perception, and eventually I'll build up to moral awareness. So then the second theory, social cognitive theory, further predicts behavior in terms of a person, a situation, and their interaction. And so there's two main components. There's an appraisal process, where objects and encounters are evaluated in light of one's motivations. So that's where the emotions come in. And then there's also the enduring knowledge structures, which then structure those appraisals of the world around you and the values associated with that in terms of what one knows and can do. So being able to, for example, identify a stick as a possible splint means that you have the capacity to splint someone's limb. If you didn't, you wouldn't, in a sense, know what to look for if you'd never seen that happen. Now, in terms of AI, statistical machine learning approaches, such as GenAI, appear the most promising in terms of appraising an environment. And then good old-fashioned AI or symbolic AI is focused more on the modeling of the knowledge structures, and it's done that for decades. I'm talking about, so this is a theory that depends upon two different approaches to AI now. So there's a little bit of a roadblock until there's a little bit a better way of combining those two different approaches. So that's thinking of AI as an entity, but then we can also think about it in terms of moral psychology, the development, you know, over the human lifespan, and use that as a way of thinking about kind of stages of developing this. So Dan McAdams' developmental psychology of the self identifies three levels of the human self, which I believe can help guide AI development. So first is an actor, which depends upon its dispositions or habits and knowledge structures to respond to the present situation. So an actor, like a very young child, is very much in the moment, dealing with what's happening around them based upon their ingrained dispositions or learned dispositions or what they know. Kind of the next level is an agent, which is where the motivations come in. And so it's kind of a motivation to act and change the future. And so this second stage is more forward, a little bit more forward looking and bringing that and how you actually can act. So it still can be fairly young. But then a narrative author, so that structures the various role identities of oneself to create consistency given one's past. So for people, agency begins development at a young age, while the ability to formulate internal stories about one's life develops in adolescence and young adulthood. So the perceptual, cognitive, and behavioral functions of the self operate not only in the physical and social world, but this also operates in the moral world. So much as one would ignore a twig on the ground if motivated to look for something else, one would ignore an opportunity to be generous if one does not identify with that virtue as being relevant to one's actual or aspirational self. So if one identifies with a virtue, such as being honest or courageous, then that's what motivates a person to respond in situations where that action is afforded. And then if there's a possibility of that action of being, you know, honest or generous or, you know, I'll talk about in a minute, compassionate, then that's going to activate the knowledge structures that would affect such action. So virtue, like being honest or courageous, is construed in relation to one's appraisal of a situation when relevant to oneself and for which for people is tied to one's moral identity. You need to kind of own that virtue in order to be motivated. And so this is kind of, you know, some of the resources and moral psychology of humans, but then I'm going to look in virtue in general, and so now I'm going to look at it in terms of compassion, and then I'll look at it, you know, in terms of AI. So for these structures and processes operate during opportunities to act compassionate. So a situation may afford or provide an opportunity for compassionate action, but one needs the knowledge structures to recognize that opportunity and to guide the behavior, as well as the motivation to appraise the possibility of compassion in the encounter that one has. So a social actor may respond kindly or pro-socially, kind of out of habit to perceived suffering. But a compassionate agent acts from the motivation to alleviate suffering. So the consequences of actions may be the same, but the motivation is important both to, like, virtue ethics and with AI for understanding and explaining its agency. And so the motivation is going to help us explain and understand why an AI system operates the way it does. So now for adults, when one identifies with being compassionate, it motivates compassionate responses when the opportunity arises. One appraises encounters for opportunities to alleviate suffering, which uses the dispositions and knowledge structures one has. And then as one does that, it further develops them gradually to become more automatic. So that's how one tries to, you know, start off trying to do the right thing. It becomes more automatic, you know, over time. And this, hang on. Okay. It just kicked me off of Wi-Fi. I'm back on. So for people, this motivation to act compassionately comes from one's identification with or aspiration to being compassionate. But for AI, we can more simplify that if it has the motivation or purpose to act compassionately, then it doesn't necessarily need the higher level narrative self-identity. So we're kind of taking, you know, an adult and kind of stripping layers down based upon the moral psychology to simplify the problem. But it could behave as a compassionate agent if it has just this purpose of being a compassionate agent. But then what it would lose would be the capacity to choose to become more or less compassionate. So like a young child might do the right thing in a situation because it's seen an adult do that. But as an adult, can make choices about whether we do or develop a virtue more or less as we're developing our identity. And so AI wouldn't have necessarily the choice at the level we're talking about in doing that, but it could still act in this way if we can build up. So this is a complex slide that covers kind of the steps that would be necessary to be a moral actor. So it depends upon kind of human systems theory and then building upon that in terms of AI. So as a foundation for considering moral and compassionate agency, consider a framework for moral action in general, which includes the models or knowledge structures and dispositions to recognize suffering and act morally and kindly in the moment. But this right here slide is before adding the motivations to act compassionately. And so I'm going to talk about this, and then we'll add the compassionate motivation in up to this. So this builds upon work in human systems that distinguish multiple levels of human experience and knowledge, which an AI system also needs to understand the human world. So that first column is through the text on the left is from human systems, kind of the first five levels that we're taking. The column of images is what's needed for an AI to actually understand the human world. And then the second column is an analogous division can model the computational realm of AI and other computational devices, including as they interact with human social and moral worlds. And then, in addition, an AI system or robot needs to perceive itself within the world, both objectively within the computational and possibly external world, and then more subjectively as reckoning itself within these worlds. And so then that's that final column as a self-reckoning actor. So as a self-reckoning moral actor, the AI perceives its own existence in its world, but it doesn't necessarily have any greater awareness of itself or its interior processing. So now we've kind of stripped down as this actor. But upon this foundation, a moral agent would then require motivations to change its world. So currently, most AI development has proceeded from the lower left corner of the figure, and I suggest further development toward the upper right corner would improve the ability of AI to act ethically and to monitor and evaluate other AI systems in terms of moral actions. And then that would lead to a better understanding of human morality, because we would have these complex models of it, as well as serve as a foundation for compassionate AI. So looking at for compassionate agency by AI would then require kind of the knowledge structures or models of a moral actor, that prior slide, along with a motivation, need, goal, or purpose to recognize suffering in order to alleviate it. because of the variety and pervasiveness of suffering, both human and ecological, the capacity to learn from its and others' experience is also likely needed. Although a full sense of a subjective self with narrative identity isn't required for agency, the AI must still reckon or place itself as an agent, understanding that its decisions affect the world and not just an actor. So rather than just responding, the motivations are about it kind of planning what its actions would do and the possible effects that it would have. And so that's, in this model, that transition from actor to agent. This also opens up future development of AI systems that could evaluate its motivations, make decisions about being more or less compassionate, and then evaluate those motivations and decision-making capacities for greater internal awareness, to then start building up that awareness of an AI and the ability to reflect upon itself. So in conclusion, especially within healthcare, compassionate AI and the explicit awareness of suffering can turn these potential harms from AI into benefits. And then we can draw upon resources in human moral psychology to begin developing compassionate AI. With a foundational framework as an AI moral actor, the complex slide, we can begin to develop a compassionate AI agent to alleviate suffering. Now, even attempting to design such an agent helps us to understand human compassion better. By building a moral actor with compassionate motivations, this would enable an AI system to respond compassionately within a relatively broad but still specific domain like healthcare, where compassionate actions are both desperately needed and also possible to measure and evaluate. And that's the reason for looking at it within healthcare, is because we can tell the effect of compassionate actions. So this could improve healthcare and initiate the longer-term development of AI that can monitor and evaluate the increasingly complex and pervasive AI within society. And it also creates a model that can help us better understand the important moral and spiritual value of compassion. Thanks.
That the AI robot mimics human compassion, but doesn't quite duplicate it. I think there's a danger of entering into what psychologists call the uncanny valley, where you have an instinctive distrust of the thing that doesn't look quite human, but is trying to look human, and I think it can be challenging to develop a trusting relationship. On the other side of that, if we as caregivers learn to rely on AI to deliver compassion, what does that do to our moral development? Are we less likely to be motivated to become virtuous people ourselves, trusting that the machines will just do that for us?
All great questions. And yes. I mean, one of the things driving this is, so for an example, in Japan, they've estimated there's going to be a shortage of like 600,000 healthcare workers. That's within a decade and a half. And so kind of my concern is like the robots are coming, and so they will be in these elder care situations. Do you want them to be a robot just plucked from an Amazon warehouse and stuck in an elder care facility? Or do we want to try and make them as compassionate as possible? Now, in terms of like the uncanny valley, I think that's there. The images of are of robots. I mean, some of the pilot studies are done or of like stuffed animals or very non-humanoid robots, especially if you're talking about like mobility issues, then, you know, that's sometimes the humanoid aspects can even get in the way of that. But part of the complexity of like the moral actor in building up this is to try and avoid that uncanny valley, so that we're actually talking about, like, in terms of it being the AI system being compassionate to some degree, not just, for example, sympathetic, but then not really addressing the issue, or operating under what would might feel like being pity. And so that's part of the nuance, is to actually understand compassion better than we currently do from a psychological perspective, building the models of that, and then putting those models within like a healthcare system. And kind of a, I mean, on a related note, I mean, one of the kind of a dystopian approach that a philosopher, Sparrow, talked about, you know, I think it's not been like 15 years ago now, is that he was concerned that we could end up with robots being the only thing like operating for healthcare, and then that, you know, he saw that as dystopian. I mean, for me, I think some of just the pressures we have on the healthcare system, you know, I think it could be dystopian regardless of whether there's robots or humans. But one of the aspirations of this is that by, in a sense, making the compassion more precise and measurable, that can actually influence the healthcare systems, so that it actually opens a space more for human compassion. And so if you've got robots that are this sophisticated, they can certainly do a lot of the menial work. And then that can actually take pressure off of the human co-workers. And so that ideally we find that usually it's humans and AI together that are usually better. And so even though I'm talking about the AI, compassionate AI, as if it's standalone, I think it really is in a system where that could actually end up improving, you know, the compassion and action of the human healthcare workers too. Because you're right, otherwise, if it was replacing humans with robots, we could lose that moral ability.
Got time for one more question. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, it is risk, and there are a lot of openness, I mean, open possibilities, and also, I mean, you know, kind of dangers from that. I mean, I guess I would say again that, like, it's usually when the human and the AI are working together. So, for example, like in healthcare, I mean, there are people already using, you know, like chatbots for people that just need conversation. But then, like, the diagnosis for something like that, you would really want a person to do it. But then, for example, if for PTSD we're doing some aversion therapy or something, the mechanical part of that perhaps could be done by AI, which would then free you up for the more complex pieces.
Good, give him a hand. Thank you.